shoved the woman back before he followed up with a quick swipe. But he'd misjudged how much power came with the extra robotics. The woman stumbling back too far for his 1-2 combo to be effective. The woman backed off and deactivated her lightsabers again, disappearing into the tunnel. He improvised, charging forward again, this time back to basics. Direct high and mid slashes, moves that would overpower if they connected properly. To his left, he heard the distinct stomp of a boot pressing off the curved wall, and red lightsabers burst out over him. Anakin turned, now on his back heel, but swung hard enough to knock the crimson beams down. His balance off, he barely had time to comprehend the sound of the woman's skirt whirling around as she switched tactics, kicking him in the gut before swooping the toes of her boot into the side of his mouth. The impact caused a grunt, though he brought his blade back up for a quick block. But it was too late, because while Mill didn't call out his name or yell, her sharp inhale was enough to draw the woman's attention. Oh. Now her blades were back up, fully readjusted in her hands.
Look at this. You're not alone.
Red shadows shifted, only faint details of cheeks and eyes moving into what turned into a smile.
Now this is interesting.
Anakin pushed her back, then attacked, using straightforward swings and thrusts. He moved with aggression, a willingness to leave himself with a few vulnerable openings in exchange for an assault that blanketed his opponent. His edge returned, pure mastery of form compensating for the lingering concerns about his right arm. With the mystery woman on her heels, Anakin seized the moment. Mill! Run to the end of the tunnel! What she'd do when she got there, Anakin hadn't figured out yet. But getting her on the opposite end at least put him in a position to shield her. The two red lightsabers whirled, and Anakin heard Mill sprinting off toward the collapsed tunnel exit. Anakin dashed backward, then used the force to grasp at the mystery assailant. She stumbled, slowing her down enough that he could close the gap between him and Mill, and he reached into the force to throw an invisible fist at the fallen rubble. A chunk of it popped out, creating a poking beam of light. He did it again, further debris jostling out, and again to the point that the small hole now gave way to an opening where he could actually see the woman's fan-shaped craft. The assassin now walked with an even pace, one red blade in each hand. Enough light shone through that details of her features became clear, from her harsh eyes to her shaven head. Her silhouette revealed a form-fitting outfit complemented with a flowing skirt, its sash belt whipping out behind her from the breeze. But before he could fully take in her distinguishing features, she dashed forward.
"Who is this youngling you're so desperate to protect?"
she asked. Now he wasn't just in combat with her. He had to guard Mill from her. She swung at him, a back-and-forth exchange of thrusts and parries, except now she used the force to knock a piece out of the rubble wall and throw a chunk his way. He gripped his lightsaber, still holding it in proper technique with both hands, but his organic hand wanted to move just a hair faster than his robotic hand, despite the enhanced strength and durability of the synthetic appendage. He glanced behind him. The rubble was now about halfway cleared, enough that if Mill and R2-D2 squeezed, they could nearly climb out.
"And you, youngling, is he your master? Have you not gone to Ilum yet for the gathering?"
"Don't answer her," Anakin said, taking a step forward, another two-handed slash, but one she blocked with ease. His left palm opened, pulling at loose debris through the force to open the hole further. But she attacked quickly, a flurry of strikes. Yet the strangest thing happened. While his fighting style often worked with a two-handed grip, Anakin instinctively parried with his robotic hand alone. And in doing so, under attack from a mysterious combatant and with a youngling to protect, its inherent differences rose to the surface. His arm didn't need to be calibrated to his old instincts. No, it was much simpler. His mind had to adapt to his arm. With that, everything shifted. Just like his relationship with Obi-Wan, all he had to do was accept that it had changed.
There's conflict in you, youngling. I myself was once a lost, frightened girl who didn't understand her own potential. Just like you.
The woman squinted, tilting her head.
Interesting. A Zabrak. I know them well. And what is that? Now I sense something different from you.
Yes. Of course.
She nodded, her lips curling upward.
Your fear reveals much about you.
Ah.
You question this Jedi life, as you should.
Whether the words were meant as a taunt to draw him out or genuine conjecture, Anakin didn't know because they triggered an instinctive reaction, a sort of autopilot among him, his lightsaber and the Force. But rather than his arm being just out of sync with this flow, it now lined up. Not a different piece of himself, but something unique and powerful. Something that added to his abilities now that he knew how to harness it. His need to defend Mill, the drive to make things right, to take responsibility for this youngling he'd brought along. All of it focused into a single outburst. His lightsaber swung with frightening speed, and suddenly, all of the woman's vulnerabilities became visible to him. His perception of time slowing down to show him possibilities before they happened. He attacked, sometimes both hands joined in his lightsaber hilt, sometimes with natural flesh, and sometimes with synthetic parts, each option being used to the fullest of its capabilities. And now he was the relentless onslaught. The hurricane of flashing blue pushing against the receding wave of red. With each swing, he marched forward, angling the woman toward the tunnel exit. Every thrust calculated to keep her off balance, to turn her two blades from an advantage to a disadvantage, to prevent her from leaping over him or utilizing the environment as a weapon. Despite all this, the woman laughed. And suddenly her focus tilted to Mill's direction.
But do not worry, young one. You are right to question the Jedi. Let me show you another path. I will free you from the ponderous shackles of the Jedi.
His lightsaber slashed downward at her, making her unsteady, and Anakin looked as her whole body shifted. One of her blades went dark. The hilt attached back at her belt, and with a free hand, she pushed through the ether to open up a larger space in the fallen debris. Then she hurled the Force against Anakin, just enough to knock him back a step, before sprinting off. Her other red blade withdrew, also latching onto her belt, and she ran toward the opening. No, toward Mill.
Mill!
Anakin yelled as he started his own sprint at her. But the woman was too far ahead, and she reached out with her arm to scoop up the youngling. Anakin's instinct kicked in, and rather than try to catch up, he reached out through the Force to secure Mill with his mechanical hand. But it was too late. The mystery woman's swift pursuit allowed her to grab Mill by the waist as she landed on top of her craft. The ship dipped slightly with the impact, sinking into the fog for a moment before stabilizing. But it was enough for her to lose her concentration. Anakin's grip extended through the Force, taking the moment to pull on the young Zabrak, shaking her loose. Mill saw the opportunity as well and slammed on the woman's arm to escape her grasp. Guided by Anakin, she floated toward solid ground when he felt a pull in the other direction. He looked up and saw the woman standing on top of her cockpit, both arms extended, Mil caught between them, a massive drop through the mist to the planet's surface below the youngling. Mil hovered through the opening, arms outstretched, Anakin and the woman equally tapping into the force to pull her from each side.
Master!
Mil cried out.
Help me!
She remained in midair, halfway between the tunnel's broken opening and the cockpit of the ship belonging to Dooku's agent. Through the force, Anakin felt her grip tighten, like a hand interlocking with his fingers.
Come on, Mil! You can do this!
She's mine, Skywalker. Let her train with a true master.
How did this woman know his name?
Ventress!
A voice called out from above.
Obi-Wan.
Out of sight, but presumably somewhere above the tunnel.
Obi-Wan!
Anakin yelled.
I've got Mil!
The hum of a lightsaber came to life. Then Anakin saw it. A blue blade thrown with precision, not at the assassin, but at vital parts in the hull of her ship. It pierced into its side, a puff of smoke followed by a short burst of flame, and the ship began to sink. Not a full-speed nosedive, but the gradual descent of key systems failing. The hilt flew back, and Anakin heard it slap back into Obi-Wan's palm. Mil soared to Anakin, landing in his arms. He set her immediately down, then dashed to the edge of the open tunnel to see this woman, Ventress, scrambling to get in the cockpit as the ship gained more and more downward momentum.
Anakin, I suggest we leave right now!
Anakin looked up to see Obi-Wan peering over the ledge, one hand extended. Without asking, Mil grabbed it. Anakin boosted her up, then climbed to meet Obi-Wan, who used the Force to help R2-D2 steady himself with just one working rocket. Mil stood with heavy breaths, but as she took Anakin's hand, her head tilted up, and a small smile crossed her lips.
Are aggressive negotiations always like this?
Anakin closed the boarding ramp while R2-D2 scanned for any signs of Ventress or her ship. The hydraulics hissed as the hardware pulled upward to seal them back up, and the Norker rumbled with a startup as rough as its external condition.
You all right?
Anakin asked, gesturing at the burn marks on Obi-Wan's tunic.
Rug puts up a tough fight, he said, glancing backward. She's a survivor. I have complete faith in her.
I could say the same thing about Mil. He pointed at her in the back room, her legs crossed as she sat on the floor.
That woman, she is a dangerous threat. We need...
Yes. Obi-Wan nodded, deep lines of concern across his brow.
I understand. Dooku's agent. I have a feeling we'll see much more of her.
He shook his head, his shoulder-length hair flowing from side to side.
The youngling is safe.
Shaken. They elevated, the cityscape below them becoming smaller and smaller. But safe. She's brave.
She is a Jedi,
Obi-Wan said, with such belief in his words, an absolute synthesis of bravery and purpose, as if it were impossible for the two to be separate, whether initiate, Padawan, or Jedi Knight. Anakin turned away from Obi-Wan, thoughts pulled in so many directions as the shuttle broke atmosphere. The galaxy map appeared on the main console, and Anakin punched in coordinates to Coruscant, mapping out a zigzagging route designed to shake any suspicion the Trade Federation might have of a suddenly departed shuttle.
What about you? Obi-Wan asked. You are safe as well.
Me? Anakin looked at his mechanical arm, the fingers gripping the shuttle throttle in a way that started to feel more instinctive. I may have to start training a little differently. The blanket of stars in front of them bled into star lines, and the shuttle shook as they entered the tunnel of hyperspace. but I'm fine. I always am. Chapter 49. Obi-Wan Kenobi. Senator Amidala appeared on the shuttle's communication screen. A more formal version of herself, compared with several hours ago, when they had interrupted her journey from Coruscant to Naboo. As if her clothes were her armor, her entire demeanor changed with the shimmering dark gray cloak draped over her shoulders and hair molded into an oval metal headpiece. The simple pendant from earlier had been swapped for more ornate jewelry. Though Anakin still carried himself differently when Padme was involved, her subtle glances or the split-second lingers disappeared with her more formalized attire. Was this the level of control that came with being queen at a Padawan's age? 3PO and I have processed the data. I've also viewed a recording of Master Kenobi's speech on Cadorna Moidia. Obi-Wan, she said, eyes turning to him, I agree with your findings. There is a clear third party here, which puts the entire balance of the galaxy at risk. I will share it first with the Chancellor, then the Senate Security Committee. Palpatine? Obi-Wan asked, a rare slip in his discipline. Anakin turned with a quizzical look on his face, and even Padme's head angled at the question. Is there a problem with the Chancellor? She asked. This was not the right company to question Palpatine. And while the Chancellor steered the Republic through many layers of bureaucratic churn, often toward a more effective society compared with his predecessor, he still operated under a politician's mindset, allowing cultural passions and prejudices to influence his agenda. Something like this needed more objectivity. It is not a problem with the Chancellor or any single individual. Given the nature of this evidence, I feel it best served by being released independently, directly to the public, without the filter of politics. Master Kenobi, I respect your opinion, but this is a matter of security. It must go through Republic channels. And I have known the Chancellor a long, long time. We may not agree on everything, but I know he will give it the appropriate consideration. I trust him, Anakin said, an almost reflexive defense. He's a good man. I've already let his office know that I have an urgent communication for him. As soon as we enter orbit around Naboo, I will present this to him personally. Thank you, Senator, Obi-Wan said, bowing his head, for all of your service. I look forward to seeing you two in person again soon. Me too, Anakin said. Again, his energy surged, and as it did, a small despair crept into Obi-Wan's thoughts. Anakin just couldn't help himself. And didn't that explain everything? Anakin stood up and pointed to the back storage room where Mill rested. I'm going to check on Mill, he said. Maybe try to get some sleep myself. R2, can I trust you to fly the ship? From the cockpit, the droid beeped. Very funny, R2, Obi-Wan retorted. Just because I don't like flying doesn't mean that I'm not capable of it. Then his voice dropped as he glanced back at Anakin, who was checking the control panel one last time. Though I certainly don't mind staying here for a moment. I have to contact the Jedi Council anyway. Obi-Wan waited for Anakin to be out of hearing range to begin the discussion with Yoda, Mace Windu, Kit Fisto, Evan Peel, and the rest of the Jedi Council. And while most of it focused on a chronological recap of events on Cadorna Moidia and the emergence of Asajj Ventress, there wasn't much to say from a strategic perspective. The next step lay in the hands of the Chancellor. Something that both Yoda and Mace seemed to embrace on the same level as Anakin and Padme. There was, however, one further revelation from recent days that needed dealing with.
Master Kenobi, more to say, have you?
Seconds. They had been mere seconds away from Kitar detonating the final bomb himself, and any sort of emotional entanglements or simple caring could easily pull someone away for those slivers of time. Had those seconds come in another situation? One where Anakin's decision-making might make or break the galaxy? How would his personal feelings interfere? The issue required a confrontation. But as Obi-Wan considered the flickering images of the Jedi Council, he asked himself, should they be the first to know? No. Obi-Wan should speak to Anakin about this before presenting it to the Council. At the very least, he owed that to his former apprentice. Nothing else. We will arrive at Coruscant shortly.
Very well. Upon your return, speak to you I will. Impressive diplomacy, Master Kenobi. Very impressive.
Obi-Wan responded with a simple nod, his mind too preoccupied with the weight of Anakin Skywalker to really consider what Master Yoda's cryptic farewell meant. The image of the Jedi Council faded as he leaned back in the rickety chair, squeaks and squeals coming from its old joints. He listened for noise from the back storage space, and Anakin's deep, muffled voice clearly registered, followed soon by Mill's similarly muffled voice. Their old ship may have been built for hauling deliveries, as privacy didn't seem to be a concern. Obi-Wan shook his head and told himself to be productive at a time like this, at least until a quiet moment with Anakin presented itself. He considered a restful meditation, and though he'd accomplished that in many uncomfortable places before, this particular ship offered enough physical irritants to make that impossible. Instead, he turned on the comm system again, this time tuning into the holonet in case Count Dooku made any sort of public statement about the events of the last day. But the fallen Jedi Master wasn't on the screen when he turned it on. Instead, he took in a quick gasp, one that he really hoped Anakin didn't hear. Because on the screen, the words live broadcast in the upper corner stood Satine Kryze of Mandalore.
This newly formed Council of Neutral Systems will stand on principles, not violence. For once we commit to violence, we have already lost.
The cam hovered close to Satine's face as she spoke from the Royal Palace on Mandalore, her purple headdress and swooping neckline of her blue outfit rivaling Padme's in elaborate design.
Extremism is rising across the galaxy. It must be extinguished before more lives are lost. There is only one solution for all of us, on all sides. De-escalation. And there is only one path to de-escalation. Refusing to contribute to this war.
That line made Obi-Wan sit up. Was she quoting his speech, or was this just the most incredible coincidence? He watched now, previous fatigue traded for a spike in attention, and though she argued against what he lobbied for, she framed it in the most compelling way. A statement delivered to urge planets and systems to reconsider their stance on the Clone Wars, no matter what side they were on.
War is intolerable, and for those on either side that believe it is the only way, listen to me now. That is wrong. Killing will only beget more killing, and Mandalore will not be a part of it. I know many, many others feel the same way, and they all see how logical peace is. Whoever is out there, whoever is listening, know that the Council of Neutral Systems stands for peace, and we invite all of you to stand with us.
The screen flipped over to a holonet news reporter who promptly began chattering over images of Satine mixed in with Count Dooku, Chancellor Palpatine, and clone battalions.
That was Satine Kryze, leader of the Council of Neutral Systems. As the Duchess of Mandalore, Kryze has rejected Mandalore's history of violence for a pacifist movement. And now she is asking others to come along. Is this a reasonable path, given the terrorist attacks of the Confederacy of Indo-
Obi-Wan flipped a switch on the console and the signal faded to black, though her words repeated in his mind. Killing will only beget more killing, and Mandalore will not be a part of it. Even during that brief period together, when Satine's idealism intoxicated Obi-Wan's youthful enthusiasm, she talked of a peaceful Mandalore. Such an idea seemed as impossible as arguing with gravity itself. And yet there she was, organizing entire star systems to join her pacifist movement. Had they run off together, had he left the Jedi Order and she'd chosen a completely different life, what impact would they have had on the galaxy? And now, because they grew past their feelings and trusted in their paths, she led Mandalore in bold new directions while he sat, newly appointed, in the rarefied air of the Jedi Council. The door to the back jammed halfway across, and Anakin's fingers gripped the edge, pushing it free. "Ugh," he said, coming out of the back room. "The ship is too bumpy to get any rest. I heard you watching the holonet. Anything interesting happening out there?" The opportunity for quiet conversation was here, and he knew exactly what to say, how he wanted to say it. Yet Satine's words jarred him off that path, creating a hesitancy to use the moment presented in front of him. Obi-Wan watched as his former apprentice knelt down to examine the door's sliding mechanism, likely already considering all the options he had to fix it. It took a little bit of time and discipline for both Obi-Wan and Satine to find their way. Could Anakin achieve that same maturity? Of all the questions impossible to answer over recent days, this proved to be perhaps the most inscrutable. And inscrutable meant that he would be patient. For now. "Nothing important," Obi-Wan said.
Chapter 50. Anakin Skywalker.
Coruscant's mix of fresh air and industrial fuel burn felt like home to Anakin. Strange for someone who grew up on a desert planet that seemed to collect most of the galaxy's discarded technology. Mill, on the other hand, didn't seem nearly as enthusiastic about the return. Her shoulders slumped and she avoided anyone's gaze, instead looking down or away the whole time. Obi-Wan marched off without a second thought, and R2-D2 rolled behind, wheels bumping over the uneven deck plates on the loading ramp.
"I see Master Yoda down there,"
she said as Anakin knelt down. He glanced over his shoulder to see the Grand Master ambling toward Obi-Wan, moving gingerly with his cane to meet Obi-Wan halfway up, before promptly starting their discussion. "Looks like he wanted to debrief Obi-Wan immediately."
"But hey," Anakin said, his cheeks lifting with a smile. "This is good timing. I can tell him about everything you've accomplished. You're close to the age for being selected as a full Padawan. I imagine once word gets out, several Jedi Knights will wanna..."
"Master," Mills said, looking up at him.
Their eyes finally connected, and he could see the confidence she'd built up over the past few days lurking behind a sudden nervousness. Something that seemed out of character for the person she'd become.
"I know you feel like you don't fit in. I feel that way too.
A questioning," he said. And though he didn't want to mention Ventress, he considered her very words in the tunnel.
"But you can turn that into something stronger. Your empathy, your abilities, they set you apart. You deserve to be a Jedi. You've connected with the Force. You've learned to control it."
Anakin thought back to a quiet moment with Qui-Gon, something hidden from everyone else, possibly even Obi-Wan, on the passage to Naboo. He repeated the fallen Jedi Knight's words now in a position where they'd never felt so true.
It will be a hard life. But in the end, you will find out who you are.
I understand, she said,
which should have come with joy, but her look gave away that further gears turned in her mind a new consideration, if not peace, then some sort of resignation. I can sense the uncertainty in you. And when I feel that way, I think back to a story my mother used to tell me.
Your mother?
Her focus changed, eyes dropping into his chest, as if she saw right into the very essence of his being. Yes, this story is one of my earliest memories. Anakin hesitated, the confluence of different emotions stealing his breath for a moment. It's about a Tatooine myth, the Sun Dragon. The Sun Dragon is a beast that lives inside a star, guarding everything it treasures. Nothing could hurt it, not fire, not flame. It survived through the most impossible circumstances, even life in the core of a star. Because the Sun Dragon had the biggest heart in the galaxy, a burning furnace powerful enough to protect everything and everyone it loved. My mother used to tell me the story in different ways. A celebration for good days, a lesson for bad days. But it always returned to one thing, the most important thing. Your heart can take you where you want to go, where you need to go, because it is strong enough. That's why I'm telling you this now. Anakin put his hands on her shoulders, just as Qui-Gon had so many years ago. You are strong enough. Through everything we've faced in the past few days, you've shown me exactly who you are. You're brave, you're smart, and you have a unique gift unlike any I've encountered within the Order. You can do anything your heart wants. Mill's lips pursed, her eyes dropping, not in defeat, but clear contemplation.
You really believe that, don't you?
Yes, Mill. I believe that more than anything. He moved to sit down on the rickety deck plates, his intentions turning in a way that he wished Obi-Wan had done more often. Though perhaps his own stubbornness, his constant need to one-up his mentor, ate up so much of their relationship that a moment like this proved impossible. Sit with me. Breathe. Just breathe and feel your place in the Force. You'll see. You'll see everything. The floor shook slightly as Mill sat down as well, the different distribution of weight tilting the uneven deck plate. He watched as she closed her eyes, then fell into a near motionless state, the only movement coming from her breathing and the occasional flutter under her eyelids. Seconds passed, then minutes passed, the world feeling still enough that Anakin heard Obi-Wan and Yoda's voices, but he couldn't tell how close or far they were.
I feel the Force, she whispered. Join me in meditation.
Anakin complied with the youngling's request, closing his eyes and reaching into the Force. Currents surrounded him like waves in an ocean, each one pushing and pulling at different pieces of him. His time with Padme, his changing bond with Obi-Wan, his loyalty to the Republic, to Chancellor Palpatine, how the recent days both challenged each of these and yet brought them all closer together, perhaps even bringing them toward a unification. He let himself float in this space, the pulsing currents batting him around. Within this ocean of the Force, a presence existed, no, an awareness, one that Anakin would encounter at times of extreme duress or deep meditation, something that felt like equal parts guidance, soothing and questioning, something that despite his best intentions, he didn't listen to. Qui-Gon Jinn. That came and went, replaced by something much more tangible. His mother, telling the Sun Dragon story as if she sat on the edge of his bed, as she did on so many nights in their small Tatooine home. The Sun Dragon. He was the Sun Dragon, with a heart more powerful than a star. He could do anything if he just cared enough. No, he would do anything. He would do everything. His existence in the Force was not a tug of war between duty and love, between friendship and partnership. It was all of those things at once. He would not try to stifle himself into just one path. His heart would burn bright and commit to all of it. He felt it now, the voice in his head whispering a simple truth. This was Anakin Skywalker, the one who would simply find a way. Mill broke him out of meditation with a sharp gasp. Anakin opened his eyes to find her looking straight at him. I understand, she said. And though she'd said those exact words just minutes ago, something about them carried a different weight, almost an inquisitiveness. You said that before, he said. A return to the physical realm that proved more jarring than most meditations. Yes, but this time I understand so much more. About so much more. Mill looked like each consecutive word lifted a weight off her shoulders. She got up first, this time holding her hand out. Anakin took it, despite being older, taller, and significantly stronger than her. And yet her firm grip felt like it pulled exactly the right amount to lift him onto his feet. Thank you, Master Skywalker. I want you to know... She clasped her other hand around his, then shot him a look, her smile content, but her brow curious. I want you to know that I appreciate everything you've done for me. Of course. Are you ready, youngling? She nodded. I am. They turned, only to find Yoda and Obi-Wan still standing halfway up the ramp rather than moving on. How much had they overheard? Master Yoda, Anakin said, his voice dropping to his usual deferential monotone. I'm sorry. I didn't...
Deep meditation you were in. An important moment.
Yoda tapped the ramp with the cane, its tip getting stuck for a moment in the grating.
Passing wisdom, he said,
in a slow and generous tone.
Something to say, youngling?
I do, Master Yoda.
Anakin shot her a grin and an encouraging nod as she looked up at him.
I feel the Force.
She took in a breath and nodded as well. But this may have been more for herself than to acknowledge Anakin's gesture.
I feel the Force, but I have no desire to ever become a Jedi Knight.
Chapter 51 Obi-Wan Kenobi. Mill's words left the trio of Jedi quiet. Yoda let out a curious mmm, while Obi-Wan opted not to speak. It wasn't his place. But he watched Anakin with interest. He'd watched the entire thing this way, both the conversation and impromptu meditation between Anakin and Mill. Yoda observing on the boarding ramp with enough presence to understand that something important was happening, that the flow of the Force was shifting. Not in large, galaxy-changing ways, but something more personal.
Important these quiet moments are,
Yoda said, before they took several steps up the ramp.
Echo forward, they do.
Anakin's eyes went wide as if he couldn't comprehend the youngling's statement or her intentions. Moments after he'd connected with Mill on such a deep level, after revealing something so personal as a story his mother told him, his expression ran a complete cycle of emotions. Obi-Wan knew what he would expect if it had been a conversation between them, arguing, of course, regardless of the topic, along with a nearly instinctive opposition leading to Obi-Wan's eventual sigh of exasperation. And on the very rare occasion, irritation would overtake him enough to make a snide comment or scold. This, of course, was different, and also different from the conversations he'd observed with Padme. Obi-Wan cleared his mind of judgment, instead letting himself observe objectively. Though it seemed like minutes passed in silence, only perhaps 10 or 15 seconds ticked by. And finally, Yoda answered Mill in a way surely designed to push everyone to consider further.
Trials will determine that. Your true path. Find you it does.
Mill looked up at Anakin, an uncertainty in her eyes at Yoda's noncommittal statement. Master Yoda, Anakin said, a calm gravity to his voice that Obi-Wan rarely heard, in fact, may have never heard. In recent days, I have learned to trust Initiate Alabeth's judgment. She is wise and brave, with a unique connection to the Force that guides her path. If there's one lesson I've passed on to her during our short time together, it's to trust in yourself. I believe we should listen without judgment to her feelings on this. Between Anakin's short speech and the quiet moments with Mill, it dawned on Obi-Wan that the young man's actions reflected the teachings of someone else. Qui-Gon Jinn. Anakin stood next to the youngling, and all of the concerns about how much he was guided by caring instead of faith in the Force suddenly took on a new context. The typical stoic discipline of their ways always fighting with Anakin's overwhelming impulses. This was a problem, wasn't it? But it also encompassed the way Qui-Gon would have taught him. Another question came to Obi-Wan, something that stunned him enough that his shift in demeanor even caught Anakin's attention. If he had just a drop of that willingness to think outside of the Jedi way, would things have been different with Satine? Obi-Wan felt his pulse accelerate, a discomfort at such a thought before he let it drift away, accepting that it would pass. Or at least he tried. Despite a lifelong instinct for clearing his mind, questions began rolling up on one another, all leading to a consideration about what it would be like to feel the way Qui-Gon did, and to see it to such an extreme as Anakin did. Was it wrong, or just different? They stood in the entry of the barely functional shuttle, a constant dripping noise coming from somewhere since the vehicle docked. Yoda watched, his face neutral as he awaited something from Mill. Anakin also watched her, but an urgency colored his look. It was clear he wanted Mill to have whatever she wanted, even if he didn't fully agree. Right then and there, Obi-Wan finally understood that he'd been wrong about what Qui-Gon meant to either of them. So wrong, in fact, that it astonished him. It took a decade, an emerging war, and the dual promotion of Anakin's Jedi knighthood and Obi-Wan's ascension to the Jedi Council for him to realize this. Anakin had said before that Obi-Wan was the closest thing he had to a father, but that wasn't totally true. However brief or long, Qui-Gon molded both of them, ushering them into paths based on a belief that they had greater destinies. Their lives were not intertwined by the ties of master and apprentice or any fatherly relationship. It was greater, longer than that. A bond that grew from the moment they shook hands on the Queen's ship above Tatooine. Obi-Wan and Anakin were forever bound by something without rules or obligations. Something intangible yet powerful and fragile. The faith that Qui-Gon Jinn had in each of them. With that epiphany, it was as if the universe tilted. Colors and light and sound absorbing into his senses through a slightly different filter. Yet in a blink, it all became part of Obi-Wan Kenobi. His disciplined Jedi mind so committed to a life of flow that these monumental shifts simply integrated into his very being. Tell us, youngling, Obi-Wan said in a soft voice, though his eyes connected with Anakin. We wish to hear.
I have a different way of connecting to the Force.
Mill started. She is special. I've seen it myself, Anakin said. Go on. You can tell Master Yoda. The youngling nodded, then gulped with hesitation.
I believe in you.
Anakin's short expression of confidence opened the door for Mill, as if all she needed to speak was someone's encouragement. Yoda listened with intent while Anakin waited, letting the youngling take the lead. The gentle prodding, so different from his fierce determination on the battlefield, or in an argument with Obi-Wan, proved to be the difference. His feelings, the way they pulled at him, a potential distraction in a time of war, they also powered him to connect with Mill in ways that Obi-Wan didn't comprehend. That insight required a certain maturity that hadn't existed in him as a Padawan. Or maybe Obi-Wan simply hadn't let himself see it before. Yet here, on the boarding ramp of a ship that barely held together, he began to understand. Anakin had faith in Mill. And finally, after so many years of self-doubt and petty gripes, Obi-Wan found himself starting to truly recognize Qui-Gon's faith in Anakin.
Chapter 52, Anakin Skywalker.
Palpatine's speech played out in front of them. Anakin and Obi-Wan stood in the alcove of the Senate, watching the mix of theatrical oration and dense political policy. Somewhere on the other side of the massive rotunda sat Padme, probably with Bail Organa. Other Jedi lingered in the outer hallways, listening as their fate would be decided by politicians rather than the Jedi Council, though many remained in the Jedi Temple itself.
It is profoundly disappointing that in the aftermath of the Cato Ne Moria tragedy, the Trade Federation today has reaffirmed its commitment to neutrality despite the overwhelming and, dare I say, disturbing evidence presented by the Republic. The fact that other sinister forces are at play is clear, and the only choice is this. We must do whatever we can for this war to reach its conclusion as quickly as possible.
Anakin found Palpatine's words righteous. They came loaded with an understanding of the fragility of the situation that others lacked. Obi-Wan, on the other hand, held a grim pose, hand over his beard.
We know that there are those attempting to take advantage of this conflict. It poses a threat to our short-term and long-term stability. The only answer is decisive strategic action.
Scattered voices began murmuring from the nearest pods.
The rise of extremism necessitates a bold new initiative. The official integration of the Jedi Order into the Grand Army of the Republic. Such an action will allow Republic forces to push further, strike harder, and move more swiftly.
Shouts came from various pods with applause and cheers sprinkled between.
This initial surge may cause a strong reaction from the Separatists. They may resist. But between the strength of our clone army and...
Palpatine paused, and Anakin knew him well enough to know that the shift in tone meant the smallest smile crept onto his face.
The wisdom of the Jedi. We will defeat the Separatist threat and ensure unity in the Republic. Peace is within our grasp, and now is the time to take it.
Applause roared from the Senate pods. A patriotic fervor, delivering a sustained cheer for the Chancellor the likes of which Anakin couldn't recall. Though, to be fair, he didn't really watch many political discussions. Obi-Wan clearly didn't agree.
You look unhappy, Anakin whispered. A faster end of the war is a good thing. The Chancellor will be able to take more decisive action now.
I already know what accelerated integration means.
Of course Obi-Wan would know. In recent days, Anakin's former master received word that the Council found his performance on Cato Ne Moria so impressive that his seat would become permanent. If he'd had any reservations about filling Colm and Trabor's boots, though, Obi-Wan didn't show it.
At least not to Anakin. Instead, the only constant on Obi-Wan's mind seemed to be the state of the war. Who fought where, what intelligence was learned, how quickly the skirmishes spread, and how the Republic now had much more influence in Jedi affairs. The Council was informed several days ago, but we were instructed to keep quiet until this formal announcement. Obi-Wan turned without even a final look as Palpatine continued on about General Grievous's recent strike on key supply chains for war munitions. Anakin followed him, a casual stroll in the Senate's near-empty hallways, despite the high-alert circumstances swallowing the entire galaxy. A cleaning droid passed by, chirping about being low on charge, but the rest of the building's visitors clustered around Palpatine's speech. We will be generals commanding troops.
We're already generals commanding troops. General Skywalker,
Anakin said, doing a poor imitation of the clone's accent.
No, I mean officially. Generals of the Grand Army of the Republic. Padawans will be commanders. The Jedi will hold true military standing in terms of strategy and resources. Our relationship with the Republic will now go far beyond peacekeeping and mediation.
Obi-Wan never let his feelings show, but as he continued describing the emerging military responsibilities of the Jedi, his face turned ashen.
We will be provided additional weapons and armor.
I don't need armor, Anakin said.
They stopped in front of a screen broadcasting the HoloNet, a newscast showing recordings of the trial from Cato Neimoidia, and Anakin soaring in for the rescue.
See? Does it look like I need armor?
Obi-Wan shook his head, Anakin's quip likely interrupting his internal risk-reward calculations of how much armor would impede his agility versus adding an extra layer of protection.
What have we gotten ourselves into?
He asked with a sigh.
Body armor, apparently. The Jedi negotiator, Obi-Wan Kenobi, pled the Republic's case,
said the reporter on the HoloNet, as the recording switched to Obi-Wan's speech on Cato Neimoidia, though his words carried a strange cadence.
I have seen the evidence. I have seen it in my own investigation as well as data gathered by others. Evidence pointing to the separatists.
That's weird. Did you see that? Anakin asked. Isn't that when you talked about the Republic materials? The recording cut again to Anakin, this time as he launched his lightsaber through two groups of battle droids.
Fortunately, Jedi Knight Anakin Skywalker was there, truly a hero with no fear as he took on the oncoming armada.
A low groan came from Obi-Wan, any levity from quips about body armor seemingly erased.
The HoloNet is nothing but propaganda for politicians. It's not exactly known for its accuracy.
I don't know, Anakin said with a laugh. Hero with no fear?
I thought I looked pretty dashing there.
Anakin,
I'm serious.
He pointed to the action on screen like something out of a holodrama rather than a news report.
You know, if we're going to be on the net together, you might want to cut that hair.
What? Any grim hesitation from Obi-Wan disappeared, instantly switching to a surprised defensiveness. Did Obi-Wan actually care about his appearance? Anakin reveled in this evidence of unexpected vanity from his former master, though he chose not to disclose how he and Padme mocked Obi-Wan's shoulder-length locks.
I'm just saying, people are going to be seeing a lot of us.
Oh, us. This was Skywalker and Kenobi as they should be. A team built on emotion and intellect, bravado and control, fire and ice. And despite no longer having the formal bond of master and apprentice, they would always be connected. In fact, they were better this way. Qui-Gon Jinn would have agreed. Anakin was certain of it.
Chapter 53. Mil Alabeth. The hangar bay looked the same as the other times Mil had seen it since Geonosis, at least at first glance. Ships came and went. Jedi walked with their padawans. Clone troopers carried supplies and weapons. But upon closer look, things had changed since the recent Jedi Military Integration Act. Around the galaxy, skirmishes intensified, the shift in Republic policy provoking an increase in separatist activity, leaving scattered battle damage across gunships. And some of the Jedi had adopted plated armor covering their chests, shoulders, and forearms, subtle changes to their tunics to accommodate the change, including Anakin and Obi-Wan, who currently stood over a supply crate examining armor pieces. This is purely a trial period. Anakin lifted his arms and twisted his body. No long-term commitment. He pointed to Obi-Wan's left arm, which now carried a white armored vambrace. I just got used to my arm, now this?
I think it's quite practical, Obi-Wan said,
turning to examine the Republic crest painted on his shoulder pad. Something else about Obi-Wan looked different, and it took Mil several seconds to put it together. Obi-Wan's once long hair now sat neatly trimmed with a simple part to one side.
It's so bulky. I just can't...
Anakin paused, then turned. Mil.
Master Skywalker.
Obi-Wan gave a polite bow as she turned to him.
Master Kenobi. You look happy,
Anakin said, relief coloring his tone. Happy may not have been the right word. Content felt more fitting. A long journey into deep space as war broke out across the galaxy? Would anyone be happy about that? But Yoda's suggestion that she use her innate abilities to assist Rig Nima in providing specialized medical and spiritual assistance for war-wounded Jedi, such a task felt far more important than building a lightsaber.
We're leaving soon.
She pointed far across the bay at the red consular-class cruiser separated from the rows of warships, something designed only for a handful of passengers and medical supplies.
Master Nima says our first stop is Valo.
You have found your path, youngling, Obi-Wan said. I wish you great success in it.
I wouldn't have without Anakin. Before we set out, I wanted to say thank you.
Anakin knelt down and took her hands, and though he probably didn't realize it, such an act connected them in the Force the same way it did when they were in deep meditation together above the boarding ramp. She saw it again, as if the Force put Anakin's inner storm directly into her mind. A blanket of deep black, and in the center of it, a bright, burning sphere. No, tiny white dots littered the blanket, a canvas of space. And in the middle of it all sat the molten intensity of a star. During meditation, she saw this, a peek into what must have always been going on inside Anakin's soul. But here, with Master Nima training her abilities for greater control, greater insight, the vision took her into the star, beyond layers of whipping flares and surface fire. Deep within the star swirled the form of a dragon, its long body twisting and twirling. And between the flaming claws, the dragon clutched something inscrutable. A brilliant, fragile light. Something that felt like it could either explode or extinguish if the dragon let go for just a second. I believe in you, Mil. Always remember that.
Thank you, Master Skywalker. I will.
She let go and turned tentative steps toward Master Nima's craft. Her pulse quickened, two paths emerging before her, one where she said something now, and one where she remained quiet.
I think you made an impression on her,
Obi-Wan said, probably with the assumption that she was out of earshot. Perhaps you're ready for a Padawan. Speak or silence, the choices weighed on her with each step. What? Absolutely not. That sounds like the worst idea in the galaxy. Mill stopped. She had to. She owed Anakin that much. Mill turned around, then began to walk back. Her movement caught both men's attention, and without any further word, she took Anakin's hands again and looked at the deep blue eyes that suddenly reflected everything she'd witnessed through the Force. There's something I want you to know. What's that? Master Nima explained Mill's gift as a connection to the way emotions pushed and pulled the Force. And now she saw into his very essence, a smoldering furnace of a heart, a passion so furious that the intensity of his feelings might be the very thing to incinerate himself into his worst nightmare. A cold, withered dragon's final grasp for control. Its brilliant home burned away into a lifeless lump of minerals. The life of a Jedi in all of the Order's forms meant a life of sacrifice, but not to the point of self-destruction. He could choose differently. If someone just gave him permission. If Mill never crossed paths with Anakin Skywalker again, she hoped that she might offer a single truth, a drop in the ocean that might ripple out with unseen possibilities. You don't always have to be the Sun Dragon. All around them, clones moved quickly, sometimes sprinting to a transport. Droids pulled supplies and weapons on repulsor lifts. Jedi Knights and Padawans walked in pairs, talking and pointing. Ships lifted and zoomed out, or stumbled inside, damaged wings or tails or thrusters bringing them to a shaky return home. In between all of that, Anakin's face froze. Mill blocked it all out, even Obi-Wan's reaction, whatever it was, and focused only on Anakin as he slowly closed his eyes, silent. She let go of his hands and walked toward her future with Master Nima.
Chapter 54, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Had Obi-Wan ever seen Anakin stunned like that? Not speechless, like when Obi-Wan expressed his gratitude on the rooftop during their escape, and not shock, like when the Republic swooped in over the Geonosian arena. But the eyes-closed silence resulting from a single sentence carrying the weight of the galaxy. He'd overheard Anakin tell Mill part of the Sun Dragon story right after they landed on Coruscant, but he'd simply assumed that it was a tale parents told their children. A fable to steer them in the right direction. This clearly struck Anakin in a much deeper way. Was it because of whatever happened on Tatooine with his mother? Or because of his bond with Mill? Or something to do with Padme? Or all of it? Anakin, he said softly, putting one hand on the armored shoulder of his former Padawan. I have known you since you were a little boy. And not once did you tell me about the Sun Dragon. Anakin opened his eyes and turned to Obi-Wan, a rare wistfulness to the light in his pupils.
My mother,
he started, his voice trailing off, and Obi-Wan realized that Anakin might be revealing much more than a childhood fable. Perhaps he was finally ready to discuss the recent events on Tatooine, the thing he'd been so cryptically avoiding.
My mother,
Anakin said again. Obi-Wan gave him space, an invitation for Anakin to finally disclose what had really happened, why it so clearly troubled him. For a moment, Obi-Wan chastised himself for not asking earlier, for not simply acknowledging out loud that he'd be available whenever the truth was ready to surface.
On Tatooine,
Anakin continued. But such coercion felt against the Jedi way. They lived a life guided by flow, not emotion. Anakin still had to master that fact. Obi-Wan told himself to be patient, and when Anakin was ready, then he would be ready in return, whether that was now or later. If a war slowed that down, then they would figure it out at the right time. The galaxy, after all, needed them at this moment.
My mother, he said one more time, before taking in a large gulp of air, and the light shifted in his eyes. She would tell me that story on hard nights.
Obi-Wan smiled, then tucked away his own feelings on the matter for a later, more appropriate time.
It's something I kept close. I only seek it when I need to remember what should guide me.
His eyes dropped, then his hands adjusted the armor over his chest.
I've only told a few people about that.
His lips pursed, and Obi-Wan let him be wherever he was until Anakin's focus returned to the hangar bay, surrounded by machines of war. A few people. Did he tell Padme that story? Anakin glanced up, then reached down to the supply crate at their feet for a white armored sleeve before handing it to Obi-Wan.
Maybe I'll tell you the full story soon.
Over lunch, he said, his mood resetting. It's been a while since I've been to Dexus. This tale clearly meant something to Anakin beyond the usual importance of a child's favorite parable. And if he'd told Padme about it, if he'd let her behind his defenses, then perhaps she also knew much more, and... Obi-Wan stopped himself there, letting the thought pass, along with the urge to either confront Anakin about his infatuations or tell the Jedi Council his concerns. Instead, he asked himself a simple question, one that crystallized the truth of Anakin's past, present, and future. Did he believe that Anakin would make the right choice when called upon? Obi-Wan watched as Anakin looked at Mil, tracking the youngling with pride across the hangar bay as she strode with confidence. That single look presented the answer plain as day, because Anakin had given that to Mil, not with force training or lightsaber techniques, but simply by caring, by being Anakin Skywalker, the Chosen One. Without hesitation, without questioning or searching for justification, Obi-Wan found himself saying yes. Qui-Gon Jinn had a pure and unwavering faith in Anakin. Obi-Wan was merely the conduit for that. And that was all he needed to know. Obi-Wan attached the armor to his forearm, then moved in precise defense motions, seeing if the molded piece of plastoid alloy inhibited him in any way.
Just say the word, and I'll have Dex reserve our table.
Footsteps approached, a clone trooper with yellow trim across his helmet trotting up to break their conversation.
General,
he said,
the report you requested.
Obi-Wan took the datapad from the clone's outstretched hand before giving a quick nod of acknowledgement. Anakin angled for a look, and Obi-Wan turned the datapad to show him the latest findings.
Thank you, Commander Cody. I look forward to working with you more.
From Cato Neimoidia? Anakin asked, his brow narrowing as he squinted at the screen, and he pulled toward personal history now reset to the context of war.
Indeed, but not quite the business we were involved in. A prisoner transport crashed several days ago on the surface. The official story is that all five prisoners aboard died.
Obi-Wan ran his hand through his now trim hair. He scanned through the details on the screen, searching for something concrete, then held it up for Anakin to see.
There it is.
Anakin pointed at a single line on the datapad screen. Only four bodies were found. File upon file swiped by. A comprehensive list of prisoner histories, transport schematics, crash site investigations, and other key details put together by Republic Intelligence.
And one unidentified prisoner is simply presumed dead.
Obi-Wan locked eyes with Anakin, a galaxy of possibilities now between them. Shall we go to Dex's now? He does cook well, but I really go more for the conversation. Anakin set his armor pieces back into the supply crate, then gestured at the exit. It's like you said, whenever it's us, things get complicated. Which was true, but recent weeks had also shown the other side of that. As long as they were together, complications were no challenge. Not for Kenobi and Skywalker. Though they strode forward together with purpose, Obi-Wan caught Anakin looking back over his shoulder. He tracked his gaze across the bay to Master Nima's ship as it elevated off the floor, taking Mil Alabeth to her destiny, while the two of them walked off toward their own.
Epilogue. Rug Quarnum.
Rug had pledged her life to the Nemoidian people, so it seemed fitting that she stared down her end somewhere on the surface of Cato Nemoidia. Since escaping from the disabled prisoner transport, she'd landed somewhere far beneath the city of Kyre Unaris, ankle possibly shattered. But a splint and cane crafted from vines and branches got her at least to a place free of wildlife dangers. Enough shelter of wood and rocks and mist to think of some possible plan. And though her options were few, she thought she had a chance. After all, she was a mere political prisoner. Why would she be worth the hunt? Then she saw the platoon attack craft land, quickly followed by the familiar sound of battle droids unfurling in unison, a clack-clack-clack of activation. So many came into sight through the thick mist, in fact, it demonstrated just how many the Trade Federation factories pumped out, as if these war machines were mere data pads for students across the galaxy. Rug estimated nearly 100 fanned out, marching forward with their clanking rhythm, the occasional mechanized voice reporting scans. But in the distance, something appeared. A glow. No. Two glows. And despite being cornered between rocks and trees, half buried under leaves and sticks for stealth, Rug found herself leaning forward, watching in amazement as the back row of battle droids simply disappeared. Then it happened to another row, and another, a systematic erasure, and Rug blinked to see if perhaps the mist simply got thicker and masked the droids. But no, those two little blue lights buzzed through the droids from behind, cutting through them like a knife through Nerf butter. The battle droids finally noticed that their numbers were rapidly diminishing, and nearly in sync, they all turned and began a hail of outward blaster fire. And the red blaster bolts spiraled off in every direction, the blue glows deflecting them as easily as rain bouncing off a speeder's windshield. The blue beams moved in complete harmony, two ends of an infinite tether. One, a blunt instrument, attacking with frightening speed and power, and the other, a graceful dance of precise violence. Where one moved, the other complemented. Where one attacked, the other defended. Where one swept, the other struck. They charged through the battalion, brilliant laser swords in a controlled hurricane that whipped apart row upon row of battle droids, until the last one fell with a mechanized groan. They moved forward in determined silence toward Rug, her hand gripped beneath her, dirt and shed corgi fur between her fingers, and eyes blinking through the thick Cato Nemoidian air, pulse quickening as she saw her future in front of her. Through the mist, two silhouettes emerged, the glow of their blades giving off enough light to eliminate any doubt of who approached, of who could pull off something as impossible as this rescue. There stood Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker, brothers in arms of the Jedi Order. And together, they were unstoppable.
This is Jonathan Davis. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars Brotherhood by Mike Chen. This program was produced and directed by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Nick Martorelli. Edited by Justin Kilpatrick. Post-production and sound mixing by Paul Goodrich at Merlin Studios. Star Wars Brotherhood is a production of Lucasfilm Limited and registered or trademarked where indicated. Copyright 2022. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production, copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Penguin Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.